Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us. This is, again, an unusual Sunday. We expected to be with you in Ashford today, but that can't be. So let's continue, as we have done in the past, on Zoom. Now, today is Remembrance Sunday, and I encourage you to pause at 11 o'clock this morning to consider the significance of this day. Remember that men and women faced the storms of war so that we might enjoy this day in peace and safety. This week, we've also remembered Fireworks Night, haven't we? Remember the 5th of November. Now, we're far along enough in our history to occasionally forget that it's a remembrance to a potentially world-changing bid to destroy the establishment of this nation, the monarchy, and its parliament. Now, I remember the 5th of November in my childhood, and it really just meant a mug of tomato soup and a jacket potato, waving a sparkler and laughing while my little brother cowered from the jumping jacks. But that hardly sums up the murderous intentions of Guido Fawkes and the rest of the plotters. During my long season as a pastor in Texas, I occasionally tried to describe the national significance of the gunpowder plot. The best and simplest explanation I could come up with was that people tried to destroy the government, and half the nation celebrates because they were caught, and half the nation celebrates because at least they gave it a try. And in the US now, this week, they will be shifting gears from a contentious election into the Thanksgiving season, which is a bit similar to our own harvest festivals, but it has a different origin. Now, while the effects of the turkey feast and the pumpkin pies will often cloud over the true reason for the season, it must be remembered that people risked their lives to sail a long and treacherous voyage in order to escape religious persecution. Persecution that was happening right here in Europe, and yes, even here in England. One of my favorite ever professors, and a man who became a good friend and a mentor to me, was Dr. John Dwight Pentecost. Dr. P, we all called him. He even counseled me once about taking up my present position with Insight for Living Ministries. You see, Chuck Swindoll had been his assistant pastor at Grace Bible Church in Dallas. So he pulled rank a bit to make sure that I was thinking straight when it came to making the move to the UK. Now, Pentecost, it's an unusual name, you must admit. And one day I asked him about his name. Now, as a joke, most of us in the seminary thought he might have been named that way because he was there on the day of Pentecost. But that wasn't the case. He told me it could be traced to his Huguenot ancestors. Now, the Huguenots had fled from France to escape religious persecution. They were part of the Protestant Reformation movement, and France was determined to shut them up or shut them down. So they fled to England. They were refugees who crossed the Channel by boat to find safety. That rings bells even today. And the particular ship that carried Dr. P's ancestors landed in Southampton on Pentecost Sunday. So they took the name. And eventually, when England's culture also became hostile to their faith, they carried the name with them, sailing across the Atlantic to the brave new world of the American colonies. And of course, everything since then has been plain sailing, right? And if you believe that, then I've got some seafront property in Tunbridge Wells I can sell you. What I'm really getting around to is that life is hardly ever plain sailing, either at the nitty-gritty personal level or in the broad strokes of national politics. Now, to be honest, God never promised that it would be. And this year has been particularly rough. In the fog of uncertainty since the pandemic took hold, It seems to me that tempers have been more easily frayed, patience has been in more short supply, and even the idea of a united kingdom seems to be quite a remote notion for some people. How do we cope? What do we do to keep our wits about us and to keep our thinking straight? On the radio this week, they were talking about how to stop wallowing in the COVID blues. In other words, how to keep your head straight while it's tough. The best advice they could come up with was to do something positive for someone else. And I don't mind that advice, that's always helpful. And to look for the little positives in life, the little delights that bring a smile. And the best illustration they could muster, I had to laugh at this, the best illustration they could muster was to watch your hamster eat a piece of cucumber. Now, I happen to think that we can do a lot better than that. So here's a question for you. How should we as Christians behave when the world seems to be tearing itself apart? In other words, how do we stay smooth in a rough world? Now, my text is in the book of Philippians, and that's where we'll spend most of our time. But before we go to the book of Philippians, I want us to take a quick look at Psalm 46 to settle some ideas that we can build from. The psalm opens with a firm statement of confidence in our God. The psalmist writes, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. Now that's how the psalm opens. It's a statement of just confidence in God, no matter what is happening around us. And the psalm closes with a command, an imperative, an order that is based upon such great confidence. The command, by the way, is written in God's voice. It's God himself who is issuing this imperative. He says, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. And then we say, the Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. This was clearly a psalm that was written to settle hearts and to inspire devotion and trust. And we need to be reminded from time to time that God is trustworthy. Just because the world rages around us, we mustn't forget that what looks like chaos and mayhem to us isn't a sign that our God has lost control, that he's somehow taken his eye off the ball. That will never happen. And sometimes we just need to reassure ourselves of that truth. But this imperative, this command to be still, to not panic, to stay calm, to hold on to peace, well, we have to acknowledge it's quite a tall order a lot of the time, especially nowadays. And as we now turn to Philippians chapter 4, I can suggest to you that the Apostle Paul knew that it was a tall order as well. And because he knew it, he even gave us some hints and tips to help us make it work, to help us be still and know that God is God. So in a moment, I'll read Philippians chapter 4 and verses 4 to 9. You might want to spend a moment to find that. But let's consider the situation that Philippians was written to in addressing the concerns that the Philippian church was feeling. Philippi was a Roman colony in Macedonia at the closed northern end of the Aegean Sea between Greece and what is now called Turkey. The citizens of Philippi took great pride in their city's status as the Roman regional capital. Many of them, the people who lived in Philippi, were veterans of Rome's civil war, the civil war that brought in the first glorious empire under Caesar Augustus. It was sometimes referred to as Little Rome. Situated on a major trade route, it would have been a busy, cosmopolitan kind of place. You might remember a woman called Lydia kept a business there and a household, even though she was originally from Thyatira in Turkey. Thyatira was the center of the purple cloth trade. That's where they made the dye that dyed cloth purple. And that was the business she was in, trading very expensive material to wealthy customers in Little Rome. Now we read in Acts chapter 16 that Lydia responded in faith to Paul's preaching, and she became the first documented new Christian in Europe. It's quite possible that the early church in Philippi met at her house. Now that episode, if you read the chapter, it's quickly followed by an exorcism, a public beating, and a brief but eventful stay in prison for Paul and Silas. You get the sense that Philippi was a volatile place at times, a place with a Roman sense of order, but with a short social fuse just the same. A place where anti-Roman disorder would be stamped out quickly. A brittle sort of place to live. So Paul wrote his letter to the believers at Philippi, knowing that they would often be rattled by the aggressive nature of the town they called home. Here's what he told them as far as staying smooth when things got rough. And as I mentioned, this is Philippians chapter 4, and I'll begin at verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. And finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. Just as in the psalm that we looked at, there are commands to pay attention to here. Lots of them, lots of imperatives, but they all add up to bring us to just one end result. And that result is a state of quiet assurance, a state of peace, a state of calm in the face of chaos. It's not denial of the storm. We're not trying to pretend it's all puppies and lollipops and ice cream out there. It's not denial of the storm, but calm in the face of the storm. So there are some things that we must do, commands that we ought to follow, and then there is the anticipated result when we honestly follow through on those commands. Let's look at all of the commands, all of the imperatives in these few verses. Here's what we're told to do. Rejoice. That's an imperative mentioned two times in verse 4. Let your reasonableness be seen by all. That's the imperative in verse 5. Don't be anxious. That's a negative imperative, something that you're not supposed to do. That's in verse 6. And also in verse 6, the other side of that coin is to let your concerns not evaporate, but let them be known to God. Let your prayers be known to God. And then in verse 7, we get the result of following these commands. We get the benefit, shall we say, of following in obedience to what God has said through Paul. Then God's peace will guard you. God's peace will be with you. Now then we have some more imperatives. There's another little cascade of imperatives here. First of all, think about the positives. That's the imperative of mindset. Dwelling on what's right, dwelling on what's noble, dwelling on what's pure, dwelling on what's beautiful. And not only think about what's positive, but do the positive. Paul says, follow me, copy me, do it the way you've seen me do it. These are imperatives of behavior. And then again, we get the result. And it's very much the same result, it's phrased slightly differently. Then God's personally present peace will be with you. It's the result, but it's not just the peace that God makes available, but it's the God himself who brings peace with him. It says that the peace of God will be with you, and then the God of peace will be with you. He doesn't just send peace and calm and assurance. He brings it, and he walks with us in it. Now, it has to be said that just about everybody wants to be calm in the chaos. But we don't always want to do the legwork that makes it possible, do we? Rejoice? Rejoice. Who has time for rejoicing when times are this tough? Who has time for rejoicing during lockdown? Who has time for rejoicing when the world is spinning out of control? I'll take time to rejoice when the storm blows over. Well, that wasn't Paul and Silas in Philippi. They found themselves in the depth of night, in the depths of the jailhouse, and in deep trouble. Were they railing against the injustice? Were they lashing out and kicking in? No, not at all. Acts 16, verse 25 tells us that they were spending the night praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening to them. All of Philippi would have remembered that night. We know the jailer certainly did. I'm sure it crossed all of their minds when this letter was read out to the church there. Paul's instinct to rejoice in the face of injustice, it was remarkable. But that's the point. He says we should all think about being remarkable in the face of adversity. He knew what he was talking about. He had done it. He had shown them how to do it. And he says we should be remarkable for our reasonableness too. Our faith, the Christian faith, isn't some wide-eyed, unhinged hysteria. Christians should be recognized as having thought things through and settled upon our convictions concerning Christ and his work on our behalf. It's a very reasonable faith. Something has happened in our culture where decent, rational discussion has somehow given way to shouting and name-calling. Nobody can have a difference of opinion anymore without being called out as a fiend or a fool. Well, reasonableness demands that we can listen, that we can understand, and that we can discuss our differences without defaulting to a knockdown, drag-out shambles. We must be seen as reasonable people. If you count everyone who doesn't see your viewpoint as an enemy, then eventually you'll end up with no friends, because not everybody's going to agree with you all the time. Leave room for differences of opinion. Keep space in your heart for somebody who might not share your views. Paul helps us in that regard with his second set of imperatives, where he encourages us to look for something admirable, or at least praiseworthy, at all times. Now, if you know people, then you know some people who are difficult to praise sometimes. But if you look for something noble or kind or charitable or careful in what they do or say, then that helps. No one is completely bankrupt of good qualities. Surely that's true. But sometimes we like to think they are, because it makes it easier to ignore them or to denounce them or to ridicule them. Remember, they're made in God's image, just like you and me. Look for a little bit of good, and you will always be glad you did. And when that troublesome person comes to mind, discipline your thoughts to include that little bit of good in your first response as you first think about them. Well, now, as for the results of all this, you notice that Paul phrases the same result in two different ways. I mentioned it. If we do the work of rejoicing out our praise to God and confidently praying out our concerns to him, then the peace that God offers is ours for the taking. We can be settled and calm. And when we are settled and calm in the storm, well, people notice. We have the peace of God's blessing about us. And the people around us, they're intrigued by that. But Paul also tells us not only that the peace of God will be about us, but that the God of peace will be with us. The provider of calm assurance actually walks with us in the chaos, through the storm, through the fire and the flood. Do you see the difference? God not only sends his assurance to calm us, he brings it with him. He is here. Even when you feel all alone in the storm, isolated and abandoned, while the splinters and shards of a broken society swirl about you, curiously enough, the God of peace is right there with you, in the storm, in the whirlwind, in the chaos. What should you do? Be still and know that he is God. And he will guard your heart and mind in the knowledge and love of his Son, Jesus Christ, our Savior. Amen.